that. Grab your stuff now. And I'm hoping that someone in my home who's listening to this might bring me the things that I need for communion, because I don't have them myself yet. So fingers crossed. So a couple of months ago, my family did what apparently a number of people are doing during COVID, and we got a dog. We are one of those families, and here is our little friend Milo, who's a four-year-old rescue dog, who's been a real great joy to us. But, you know, as a result of him being in our lives, our daily routines have changed to an extent, including the fact that we are walking him and getting out of the house with some regularity, right? Thanks, babe. Appreciate it. And this is what he looks like out on a walk. And yes, he is that small. And I've really enjoyed having a reason or kind of being, in a sense, forced out of the house. It's been good for me. But sometimes when Milo needs a walk, I find that I am in a hurry. Although I'm not really sure where I have to go these days. But I think I'm so accustomed to being in a hurry. I think everything pre-COVID was a time when I specialized in hurry. That even in the midst of a pandemic, I still feel in a rush. So anyway, walking Milo, sometimes feeling like I have to be in a hurry. But you know, what I've discovered is that often he is not in a hurry. In fact, quite often he wants to stop every 10 feet and smell something that he is certain is of great import, you know. And with every stop he makes, if I'm feeling like I'm in a hurry, I get more agitated. You know, I have somewhere that I need to be, though of course I don't, but I feel like I do. And so I remember one walk in particular, a bit of context here. We were just walking down our road, but our road has been torn up a lot in the last number of months. They put a new gas main down the street, and that meant lawns and sidewalks and the road all had to be torn up. And part of the restoration of that, of course, then meant that the road and the sidewalks and the lawns got put back together, which meant that a lot of grass seed got planted. It just so happened, though, that a lot of that grass seed was planted right in the middle of that heat wave. And if you know grass at all, you've tried to plant grass seed, you know that grass does not do well in the heat, especially when it is exposed and not being watered, as is often the case up and down our road. And so most of the grass did not take. It's in fact still just dirt with dead grass seed lying on top of it. Well, one evening, Milo and I are out. He's, of course, again, stopping every 10 feet. I'm getting frustrated. He stops one more time, and I'm about ready to drag him home, and then I see it, something that makes me stop. It's baby grass, just the tiniest, narrowest, greenest little sprouts coming up through the dirt. Somehow they've managed to overcome the heat and the sun. And there I was in awe and wonder. As I thought about it standing there, I was thinking about how many reasons there were for those seeds to not make it. There was really so much stacked against them, and yet, here they were, something brand new breaking into the world. So as I'm looking at this, caught up in the wonder of it all, my mind begins to think about the resiliency of God's creation. And then that makes me think about the resiliency of us, human beings. Because everything COVID has brought, it seems, has been hard. It's been a lot like the sun beating down on that grass seed. It's been oppressive and it can feel relentless. And yet when I stop and look around, there is life springing up from the ground. And yes, that new life has had to claw and scratch for every inch. And yes, it has been and still is hard. And yes, there are moments, sometimes long stretches even, of grief and sadness and loss. And there is something new breaking through the dirt. Life and joy and courage are resilient. And when I stop being in such a hurry and look around at the way that this is happening in my life and in yours, the way in which life is coming up from the ground, I am in awe. I'm caught up in the wonder of the pattern of resurrection, of life coming after loss and death. And then I felt a tug on my arm. This time Milo wanted to keep moving. He was ready to go home. But in those few seconds there on that sidewalk, I was reminded of how important, and I would even say how necessary, awe and wonder are in our lives. In fact, I would go so far as to say that we need regular doses of awe and wonder in order to know our place and our purpose in this world. So let's talk about awe and wonder a little bit this morning. And to do that, I actually want to go back to the Old Testament and look at the way in which the ancient Israelites who lived thousands of years ago, we have to remember how long ago it was that they lived and that we read about their time in the Bible. Go back to ancient Israel and get a sense for how they viewed the world and to an extent the cosmos, the universe, as much as they had any sense of that. And this may be a little geeky, but it's hopefully interesting to you here as we go along. These are some verses from Genesis, Job, the Psalms, other places, in which we find embedded in ancient Israel thought a picture of what the world looked like. And in fact, right in Genesis 1, right in the very beginning, we get a description of a firmament or a dome being created, that there's all of this water, and God, one of the first acts is to separate the waters, to create a dome that keeps water above the dome and water below the dome, and in the dome, if you will, in the firmament is the earth. So there are waters above, you have this picture of these foundations of the earth going down into that water. God is above the dome and above the water. That's kind of the realm of God. And where the dome meets the earth, that's also the foundations of heaven. And guess where rain comes from and snow? It comes from windows in the dome, windows in heaven. When they open, it rains. And underneath is this dragon, this creature, this chaos that exists, you find again in the Old Testament being referenced. And so if you were to draw this out, it might look something like this. This was maybe a decent representation of how ancient Israel would have thought of the world that they lived in. You can see that dome there, and the waters that God has separated above it, and then the waters below it, the great deep, the foundations of heaven and the foundations of earth. And the stars, the sun and the moon, are believed to be in that dome, kind of attached to it, and they move along it. Okay. Now, why am I showing you this? Well, here's what I want you to notice. Israel's understanding of the cosmos was not complete nor was it correct. And I don't know why we would expect it to be complete or correct, again, given that they lived 3,000, 5,000 years ago, right? If you imagine what people are going to know when they live 3,000 years in the future, and what they're going to look back on our time and think, why did those people think that the world operated this way, right? The same thing is happening here. So there's no blame being cast on ancient Israel. This was kind of the best that they could do given what they had. But here's what I want you to notice. Even though their understanding of the cosmos is incomplete and actually is not even correct, they were still moved to awe and wonder. And that awe and wonder changed them. You see, we don't have to understand the physics of a sunset to be moved by its beauty. We don't need a degree in botany to have wonder at the potential of a seed. When we are in awe as we hold a newborn, or we think about yeast working its magic in a dough of bread, or the power of the human body to heal a cut, or the intricacies, the precision of a flower, well, awe and wonder are available to us whether we understand the scientific intricacies of those things or not. And when we recognize the beauty, when we are taken back by the wonder and the awe of it all, something actually happens to us. Our place in the world, I would even say potentially our purpose in the world, becomes more clear. Here's Psalm 8, verses 3-9. When I look at the night sky and see the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars you set in place, what are mere mortals that you should think of them? Human beings that you should care for them? Yet you made them only a little lower than God and crowned them with glory and honor. You gave them charge of everything you made, putting all things under their authority, the flocks and the herds and all the wild animals, the birds in the sky, the fish in the sea, and everything that swims the ocean currents. O Lord, our Lord, your majestic name fills the earth. You can imagine, can't you? The psalmist staring up at a dark night sky, completely in awe at its beauty and expanse. I mean, I wonder, when was the last time you were under the black canopy of night, caught up in a full moon, or overwhelmed by the scope and the size of what you saw? I wonder, when was the last time you were stopped in your tracks by something that you noticed in the world, something that took your breath away? When was the last time that beauty inspired awe and wonder? For the psalmist on this evening, the awe and wonder of the night sky changed them. Because I think that is what awe and wonder are meant to do. They are meant to transform who we are. So let me ask you, what do you notice happens to the psalmist? Verse 3 is the psalmist getting lost in wonder and awe. And then verses 4-9, that awe and wonder helps the psalmist notice some things that are true about humanity. What are they? I'm going to give you 30 seconds to reread these verses on your own. Go for it. And ask yourself, what does awe and wonder help us recognize or notice or remember? And if you're willing, would you put that in the chat window? I'd love to kind of have a little conversation there as we go along here. So give this a read again. And then what does awe and wonder help us remember or recognize or take note of. Yep. Thanks for those comments. Who we are in relationship to God, our place and our size and the scope of things. Mm-hmm. What else does the psalmist notice or remember about who we are as human beings? Yeah, the responsibility we have. It's great. That's right. Absolutely, Stephanie. Those are spot on, all those things. Anything else? Yeah, the delight. That's great, Judy. Great, Amy, thank you. Yeah, and there's a result of praise, right, Stephanie? Beautiful. Keep it coming. If you are noticing other things or you want to affirm or add what someone has already typed, keep going on that chat window. You know, when I planned this little time here and planned having you all say something in the chat window, I thought to myself, they are probably going to precisely name the points that I'm going to make. And sure enough, once again, highlighting who you all are as people. You've already done it. But I wrote it already, so I'm gonna go through it here with a few maybe additional thoughts. So one thing I think that this does, that awe and wonder help us remember, is our place, as was said perfectly, right? What are mere mortals, the psalmist asks, right? When we get caught up in a sunset or we stare at the hand of a child and we notice how fine and perfect it is or whatever it might be, there is the possibility for humility to take hold. Now, humility is never guaranteed. Someone could see the most beautiful sunset and remain fully prideful, right? But awe and wonder open the door to us. They kind of put us in a position where we are more maybe able or willing to be humble. And if our hearts are soft and open when that happens, then we have this opportunity to remember that there is something larger and deeper. There's something, or maybe better, someone who is under it all and over it all and through it all. And that someone is not us. What are mere mortals? The psalmist asks. But the psalmist also does say, yet you made them, you made us only a little lower than God and crowned us with glory and honor. It's this incredible both and going on here. You are created and loved by God, but you are not God. You are given incredible privilege within God's creation, but you are not the center of the universe. You are strong and endued with agency, and like grass, you too will come and go on this earth. You know, it's this both and happening. Our place in the cosmos is one of incredible position, but it also requires a deep humility. So awe and wonder helps us remember our place and our purpose. You gave them charge of everything you made, putting all things under their authority. Now, it's interesting, when you and I are humble and we find ourselves in the right place, both recognizing who we are created by God, but also not trying to put ourselves into a position of greater authority than we deserve, our purpose becomes more clear, which includes, as many of you said, again, with being caretakers and co-creators in this world. We are given charge over creation so that they might be cared for. Right, this world which God created and said is good, is good, is good. This world that God made to be bountiful and fruitful, we are now called to ensure its thriving. And of course, this isn't the only thing that human beings are called to do. But for the psalmist, in this moment, this part of our calling as human beings, as co-creators with God, it came to their mind. They remembered it as they stood in awe and wonder. Our place, our purpose, and then our praise. O Lord, our Lord, your majestic name fills the earth. When you and I really contemplate and mull over this privileged, purposeful place that we have in the cosmos, a position of incredible responsibility and influence, I think praise easily falls from our lips. When we really sit with our purpose and our place, we stand not just in awe at the created world, but we stand in awe at a God who has created us, who holds our lives together, and who gives us great meaning in this world. On my walk with Milo that day, I almost missed the wonder and awe of that grass seed breaking through the ground. But thankfully, he slowed me down. And I had just enough awareness to notice the absolutely remarkable happening right in front of me. And in that awe and wonder, I was changed. I was encouraged as I thought about our God-given ability to be resilient. I was humbled as I thought about how I wasn't at the center of the grass's existence, but I did have a calling to be a part of stewarding the creation. I found myself offering a word of praise and gratitude. So let me ask you again. When have you been stopped in wonder by something you saw in the world? What takes your breath away? When was the last time awe made you pause and consider what was deeper and truer about our world? This is an opportunity perhaps to grab that paper and pen and to maybe jot yourself a note, a word, a phrase in response to these questions. You know, for me, mountains never get old. They are always awe-inspiring to me. I don't know why, but they do. And so I have some things in my life that just always have a way of grabbing me. And then there are those surprises like the grass seed on a walk with the dog. And I wonder for you, do you have things that always seem to slow you down, to inspire wonder in you? And then maybe when was the last time that it unexpectedly happened? And what caused it? Did it help you remember your place and your purpose? And did it invite praise to flow from your lips? Awe and wonder are meant to be a regular part of our life. I'm convinced of that because I can't come up with really another reason why. Well, that's not quite true. How about if I say it this way? It seems as though the world is made with such complexity and beauty and nuance so that we might take notice.